Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. I have Andy with me. How are you, Andy?
I'm good, thank you. How about yourself?
I am okay. Thank you.
Good.
Also, I noticed on last week's recording that my microphone, because I've actually found out how to use it, basically it was faced the wrong way for the whole time I've ever been using it. And now it's faced the right way. It's so sensitive, you can actually hear me like swallow. You can hear the water like trickle down my esophagus. So I hope everyone's enjoying that. It's pretty gross, but anyway. Yeah. Also, I just made the strongest coffee ever because I spilt a load of instant powder. Have you ever tried to make an espresso with instant coffee? You don't drink coffee, do you?
No, I don't drink coffee. Never have done, never will do. I like the smell of it, but I just don't like the taste.
Oh, the smell, I think, I love coffee, but the smell of it's better than the taste, 100%.
It's the same as, like, you know, like, as mental as it sounds, like, somebody smoking a cigar, I actually like the smell of the cigar smoke, but I would never smoke.
I'm not around a lot of people who smoke cigars, you know.
Nah, it's neither am I, but it's like, it's a kind of one of those smells that kind of sits with you. It's a bit weird, but I'll never smoke, but it's something that, another smell that I don't mind the smell of.
Do you know what does smell nice? People with e-cigarettes who have, like, those different flavours.
You're sitting going, ooh, menthol.
Yeah, or like, standing behind them, I'm like, blueberry muffin flavour.
berries.
Okay, should we get on?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's see. First question. Oh, actually, do I want to... I'm hoping that Gemma's best friend doesn't listen to this, so we'll just continue. She says, I mentioned to my best friend that I am the lightest I've been, and I haven't even been to the gym properly since December. And she said, oh, you must have lost muscle then. Instead of, well done, Gemma, that's amazing. Anyway, she says, I know that this isn't 100% true, but it must have some effect. How much muscle loss would you expect from stopping the program and not having worked out with any intention for a couple of months? And how would this show on the scales? If it takes a while to build muscle, why is it that I can lift heavier the following week? Oh, that's the second question. Okay, so first of all, let's cover muscle loss and how much you might expect. How long has it been?
2 months.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Minimal, absolute minimal. It's not like you're falling off a cliff. Like, you're just, if you've stopped training, she'll still be doing things like ticking over, doing things day to day, steps, etc. So, you know, it's not like some. It would be obvious if, like, somebody who trains regularly goes on holiday for a month. They don't come back looking horrifically skinny and, like, lost all muscle, so it's minimal losses.
Yeah, I think what scares some people, and it scared me in the past, because there is research to show that 2 weeks, but this was 2 weeks of bed rest, so you don't even have, like, the effects of gravity on your muscles. So 2 weeks of bed rest saw, like, really quite significant losses of muscle. And then people sort of translate that to, oh my God, you can lose this much muscle in 2 weeks. It's like, yeah, but you're not lying in bed all day for 2 weeks. And that's studies done on people in hospital who've maybe had operations where they're going to be completely immobile. Whereas even just living, as Andy's saying, like walking around, lifting things up, like all that kind of thing, even if you're not training, will still stimulate those muscles, which means that your body is kind of telling your body, we're still using these muscles, let's not get rid of them. So realistically, you might have lost a little bit of muscle. You probably haven't lost as much as what you think. And as soon as you can get back into training, that will come back much quicker. So don't stress about it.
Have we had this discussion previously about the space station and the loss of muscle and no gravity?
No, but that's an interesting one.
It was something. I'm going to Google it just now, so we might end up coming back to it. But it was a huge amount that they lost.
Oh yeah, like, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if you've got absolutely no gravity or no use of that muscle, even just like raising your arms and stuff, it's going to use different muscles. But if there's no gravitational pull and everything's just free, like, you would lose muscle really quickly. And also, what they showed with, I've not seen this study, but I know that previous work is a huge loss in bone mineral density as well. So that's quite scary if they come back and they'll have sort of brittle bones and.
Studies have shown that astronauts experience up to a 20% loss of muscle mass on space flights lasting 5 to 11 days.
Holy hell.
Astronauts on the International Space Station spend 2.5 hours per day exercising to combat the effects of muscle atrophy. That's I remember there was the interview. Remember, you know how the British guy's up there just now? There was an interview with him, and they were asking him that, and it was like, yeah, he spends 2.5 hours a day training to combat the effects of sort of atrophy of his muscles, which is
I wonder
crazy.
how they train up there. Like, how do you get resistance?
Yeah, that's interesting. Resistance bands. Bet it's resistance bands.
They must just have those little resistance bands, innit? Nothing high tech.
Benching in space will be amazing, though, because you'd be able to lift so much. You'd
Well,
be
wouldn't
sitting there
it
going,
just sort of float away from you?
exactly, I'm just lifting a ton. You've actually probably got to pull it towards you rather than push it away.
Okay, so the second part of that question was more about strength gain. So it was, if it takes me a while to build muscle, why is it that I can lift heavier like a week later? And this is a really good point, something I wanted to talk about because most of the committed group, in fact, all of the committed group, just did a block where they tested at week one and then they tested at week four. And that was 5 rep maxes for different exercises. And almost everyone, in fact, everyone who retested saw some kind of increase, and almost everyone increased on every single test that they did. So what's happening there isn't necessarily like maybe you've built a very small amount of muscle, but strength increases, especially when you're quite new to exercise. And I know a lot of you will be like, I'm not new to exercise, I've been training for a long time, but you might be new to the strength building type exercises. And strength doesn't, especially when you're new to exercise, doesn't completely correlate with increases in muscle mass. So it's more about recruiting the muscle that you already have and also being able to, say, for example, with bench press, when you first get someone doing bench press, it's kind of about finding their line. Do you know what I mean? Like they'll wobble a bit. And it's about the stability muscles being able to contract and then drive that weight upwards. So some of it's about teaching yourself the skill of that exercise, and some of it is about recruiting muscle that you already have as opposed to building muscle. Because, as Gemma points out, realistically, you're not going to build much muscle in 3 to 4 weeks. So why is it you can lift heavier?
Totally. It's the things that I notice with working with clients is things like, as you just mentioned there, is the technical aspects of the lift. So you are pressing in the right position for you. Because remember, everybody will bench differently. People will bench slightly wider, people will bench slightly narrower. It's all dependent on how the length of arm and where your arms and stuff sit in relativity to your chest, etc., to engage the muscles. So techniques, the better the technique, even things like grounding your feet and using your hips and stuff in a bench is going to help engage and get a bit more fire through your exercise. But then you've also got things like, if you know that you're going to be doing a retest, you've got that psychological element of, I'm going to put as much in as I can because I'm retesting this. So you've got the bit between your teeth and you are up for a set, you're up for the session because you want to see how much you can push. So all these little things add up, it all adds up into one. And as you say, if you think about it, over the course of 4 weeks, how much muscle mass are you going to gain? Not a huge amount. So it makes sense that these little aspects like technique, psychology and stuff like that all come into play.
Yeah, and I think one thing that we haven't touched on, and not to take anything away from the amazing increases, because I do think a lot of it has been an increase in strength or the ability to utilize that muscle as well, the learning effect. So this is something that comes up a lot in research. So if you were to test someone, if I had you everyone come in and we did a 30-second Wingate cycle test, which is horrible, by the way, if we then retested it. In fact, that's quite a bad example. Let's say I did like a 5 minute run as far as you can. Just the effect of having done that and knowing how to pace yourself will then mean that if I retested you, even if you haven't got better or fitter or anything, you will run faster or further for that amount of time. So that's quite a big element as well, that okay, maybe you'd not done a 5-rep max before, you hadn't done one for a while, so you weren't quite sure what it would be. So a lot of it was testing out, you know, how much you could push it, and then maybe you were fatigued a bit because you've already done a couple of sets at what was around your 5-rep max, but you weren't quite sure. Whereas when you come to retest it, you already have like, okay, this is what I lifted last time, I'm going to try and lift that for the first 5 reps and then see if I can increase on that. So you've kind of got a benchmark to start on. And again, in your head with the push-ups, like we did a minute of push-ups, you can't, you know what you're going for. Because like, right, okay, I did 28 last time, I really want to get 30. So you've got that number in your head.
Yeah.
So that aspect helps as well.
Yeah, the touching on that, the thing that you said about the learning experience, the learning thing, is that's massive. How do you get better at bench? You bench more. How do you get better at squatting? You squat more, because your body starts to get into, you'll get to the point where, you know, I quite like, when I squat, I don't squat that often anymore, but when I squat, I like to go and then I like to sit in the bottom of the squat, even with a slightly heavier weight, because it's a comfortable position. And if you are finding the comfortable position throughout that exercise, you're getting better at it. So you're learning the movement, which means you're going to get better at it. So, you know, you'll be able to push more because your body, as you said, knows how to recruit the right muscles in the right order that it needs to recruit them in. But also you're more comfortable with the exercise, so you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay, I think we've covered that one. Let's move on to... if I don't track calories, can I still lose weight?
Yes, yes you can.
Yeah, in a word, yes. I think that a good point to make here is that MyFitnessPal is about, I don't know how many years old it is, but I mean, no one was
I like how you used that there, MyFitnessPal.
MyFitnessPal? but it's only what? Like, no one was using it 5 or 6 years ago.
No.
It's pretty new in the grand scheme of things. And it's not the only way to lose weight. And people were losing weight before MyFitnessPal, and they can lose weight now without it.
Yep.
So you don't need to track calories. Obviously, there are benefits to doing that. And even if you don't want to track, I would recommend tracking initially. I've had actually quite a lot of conversations on Instagram recently with people sort of reaching out for a little bit of help. And they're like, oh, I don't know what to do. I'm doing this, this, and this. And I'm like, have you tracked your intake and your output? And they're like, no, but I'm like, okay, well, just do that. That gives us a starting point, and then we can make changes from there. And that's not to say you'll have to track forever, but if you're not getting the results that you want, and you've not, because now we can monitor, even if it's not completely accurate, your input and your output, and then from there we can make changes. So why wouldn't you use that as a baseline to start with?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think, again, it comes to this whole extremes. Remember, we're talking last week about the anti-dieting people. So you've got this whole movement, I would class it as, is like, oh, you don't need to track. Yes, but some people will need to track. But that's not to say that they're going to have to track forever. They could track for 6 months and then start to realize, actually, do you know what? I'm tracking the same things daily, and there's only one thing at like dinner time that I'm changing up. So I don't need to track that anymore. As long as I know what I'm kind of there or thereabouts at dinner time, I'm going to be fine. But it's this whole thing about the, you know, the extreme of, oh, you don't need to track to lose weight. Yes, you don't. But a lot of the clients that we work with need to track to start to understand food and the value, the calorific value of food, before they can then start to play off plan and not track as much.
Yeah, and it's mindless eating as well that you then think about because you have to track it. That's a huge aspect.
Yeah.
Even if you're not using like an app or anything, just writing down everything that you eat, that stops you mindless eating because you're like, oh, okay, I actually have to consciously write this down. And then you're like, oh God, I didn't realize how much I was eating without even thinking about it.
Yeah, and you know, you'll have done this when you first started in the fitness industry. How tough was it to go through people's diet plans? Like they were doing a food diary. Honestly, gee whiz, it was like, my fitness pal has made our jobs a shitlot easier.
Yeah, because it was always a food diary in hindsight. Like, you'd sit down with someone and you'd be like, okay, I want you to go off and write down in like in a notepad or on your phone everything that you eat for 3 days. And they're like, oh no, I can just tell you now the last 3 days. I'm like, you can't. Like, if it's recall, it's going to be so bad. Like, oh, this is what I had for dinner. Yeah, what about all of the snacks that you had and that can of Coke and all the drinks?
The next week. Yeah, the next week I had three. I forgot I had three bags of Maltesers that day as well.
Yeah, okay, but that wasn't a meal, so it doesn't count. What? And drinks count? What? Orange juice? Nah.
Nah.
Yeah. Yeah, it has made it a lot easier for us to monitor things as well. Yep. Okay, next question is from Leanne. She says, I'm finding I'm sitting down a lot more due to studying, which is making me less motivated to move. I literally sit down on my bum for 5 minutes before getting the itch to move, but I don't know why I started doing different accents. Now I'm lost. But being focused to with... Oh, there's no punctuation in this again, Leanne. But being... Oh, sorry. No, I just read it wrong. But being forced to do... Oh, right. Do you know what? She's basically saying that she's sitting a lot because she's studying. And that makes her less motivated to move. And usually she moves a lot. And she feels like she's turning lazy. And is this normal?
I think... I wouldn't say it's lazy, but I mean, it's not laziness. All it is that you're the... you have a shift in what you need to do. So if you're studying is the thing that's going to come first. What you may need to do is you may need to break that up and put in little walk breaks or little breaks where you go off and get some water or go to the toilet and just take a wander around the house, that kind of stuff. You know, I'm very much for me, my head programs them in automatically because I hate sitting. And I hate sitting doing paperwork.
Because Andy has the attention span of about 5 minutes anyway.
Well, look. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, we're still doing podcast. Yeah. So it's not laziness. All it is that you have a different focus on what you're needing to do. So that is not moving. That is sitting down and writing notes and studying. So it's not laziness.
Yeah. And I totally get this in the short term. I guess for this situation as well, like Leanne's got exams coming up, just sort of, you kind of just have to accept it. It's a short-term thing. You have to put in the effort. You don't want to get to the end of the exams and be like, I could have studied more, but I wanted to get my steps in. Like, you have to think about priorities here a little bit as well. But I do feel you, like, once you get out of the habit of doing something, like, so have you ever not been to the gym for like a week and initially you're like, what do people do? Like, what am I meant to do in the evening if you don't go to the gym? Like, what do people do from finishing work and going to bed? That's what I would always felt like as soon if I had to take a rest from the gym. But then after a week, you kind of flip. I'm like, God, how do people fit in going to the gym? Like, I can't fit it in with all this stuff. Basically, you just fill your time with other things, but it takes a little while to do that. So I do understand that she's almost nervous that, because she's studying so much now, she's getting out of the routine of being more active, moving more, maybe less training sessions, and that would be hard to get back into.
Yeah, it's. But the thing is, though, she's already worrying about the fact that she's lazy. So she's being lazy, which she obviously isn't. So it's not for that mindset. I wouldn't be too worried about that because she's already her mind's already sitting going, oh no, I'm not doing enough. So
yeah.
Already thinking about it.
I've got a feeling Leanne will be okay, mainly because I'll kick her up the ass as soon as these exams are done. Anyway, next question is from Jade. She says, I've read on so many platforms now that you should always eat breakfast within the first hour of waking up. Jade, what platforms are you reading this on? Please tell me. Does this actually matter when it comes to weight loss? As in, if I'm up for 2 hours, I have a coffee, I block out anyone else trying to talk to me before I've actually woken up and had my breakfast. Does this matter? Does it have adverse effects on weight loss?
Nope.
No!
Exactly. You sounded like Animal from the Muppet singing there.
Thank you.
That was impressive. I like that. Breakfast, the whole myth... It's not a myth. It's... If breakfast fits into your lifestyle, have breakfast. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. It's missing certain meals, like the whole thing about eating carbs after 6 p.m. at night. It's something that somebody has come up with because they have an agenda to sell something. In this case, the breakfast chat was actually a study that was done by Kellogg's, who, funnily enough, are a breakfast cereal manufacturer who have to sell breakfast cereals. So,
I know, and the funniest part about that study was they had everyone, so they had one group who ate breakfast, another group who didn't, and then at lunchtime they gave them like an all-you-can-eat buffet situation where you just eat as much as you want. And they found that the people who didn't have breakfast ate more, okay? So they're like, oh, if you don't have breakfast, you'll overeat at lunch. But what they failed to report was that if you add on the breakfast calories in the breakfast group, overall they still ate more calories. So, although the no breakfast group ate more calories at lunchtime, they still ate less calories than if they would have had breakfast. So, they're still at a higher chance of losing body fat if they are in deficit at the end of the day.
Simple.
Yeah. So, yeah, in answer to that question, absolutely not. And actually, that if you are someone like yourself who maybe likes to have 2 hours before they have breakfast, it's probably of benefit. And I also think in terms of productivity, pushing breakfast back helps. Like personally, I'm my sharpest in the morning, so I try and read and write first thing, and I'll just have a coffee. But if I went and made breakfast and then I was faffing around, like I would lose the most productive part of my day. So I think just working, if you're the kind of person, like I've had clients who are like, oh, I could not leave the house without having breakfast. Like, I need to have it. Then that's totally fine. Although I would probably challenge them and be like, why don't we try not having it? Just to prove, like, I hate when people are like, I cannot do this. I'm like, you can. When people are like, I couldn't possibly not eat for a whole day. I'm like, you can. Let's maybe not do that. It's possibly not a great thing to do, but you can absolutely do it. It's not the end of the world if you fast for a day.
Here's
Sorry.
a question for you.
Yeah.
This is totally off topic, but still sticking with Kellogg's. Do you know what cornflakes were originally designed for?
Was it to stop masturbation?
Yes, it was. John Harvey Kellogg thought that sex and masturbation were unhealthy for the body and mind. So he created cornflakes as an extremely plain meal to prevent masturbation.
I'm not sure I understand how that works. So don't have.
Unless you're using them as a glove, I don't understand how it's
Oh,
possible. Exactly. That would be a reasoning behind not doing it. But eating them, really?
like what? Because they're not. It would be different if he'd made like Frosties. Then you'd be like, oh yeah, I get to have a bowl of
That.
Frosties instead of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Frosties, that's a different kettle of
But
fish.
you wouldn't be like, nah, I don't want to have sex. I'm just gonna have some of these really bland tasting cornflakes.
I still don't understand how they're still about because they're the most horrific tasting cereal in the world. They're awful.
I know, and whoever eats them? I never see anyone eat them.
Old people eat them.
No, old people eat bran.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know who
But
eats cornflakes, genuinely.
yeah, I crunchy nut cornflakes, different
Yeah,
story.
see, there's all this kind of stuff, but then there is always cornflakes in the shop. Who's eating them?
I know, who is he? Unless their box is like 60 years old, you never know. Check the date on them next time.
It's really strange, actually. That's actually got to me. I'm gonna have to. I feel like Hannah would be able to find this out for us.
Yes, Hannah, that's your job for the week.
Okay, great. Right, moving on. This is from Carol. She says, you have said in general. Oh, God, sorry. I'm really bad at reading the questions today because I've not pasted them very well. Anyway, she says, I wouldn't class myself as a newbie and she'd like to build muscle. But she is a menopausal woman in her 50s. Is this realistic? Shall I go first?
Go for it.
I would say yes, you absolutely can build muscle. And although you're saying you're not a newbie, and I know that you've been weight training for a long time, you might still get some of those quote unquote newbie gains. And I think what we spoke about before, like a lot of the committed people have been weight training for years, yet they've still seen. And like no joke, significant increases in their 5 rep max in 4 weeks, which is actually quite unheard of. Like Andy, you'll know this, but any strength trained individual, would you see an increase in basically in anything in 4 weeks?
Somebody who's not a newbie, Probably not.
Like, if I,
Not.
you probably wouldn't see much increase in your bench in 4 weeks, no matter what training you were doing.
Nah, doubtful. Doubtful.
But you might, like, so that's why when you're more experienced, you'd have a longer training block. So Andy might do like a 8 week periodized block for his bench press performance.
Exactly.
And then he might see an increase. And I would say the increase is going to be what? About like, whoop, about like 2.5 kilograms if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
something quite small anyway.
yeah.
But back to the question. Yeah, I definitely think you can build muscle. I think we would need to change your training program slightly, and I think we'd really need to focus on getting in enough protein and possibly also more on the timing of that protein given your age and being postmenopausal. What are your
Do you
thoughts?
know what? No, I totally agree with the way that it's going to be tough, but there's no reason why you can't put on some muscle. Like I really I like that mindset of moving away from fat loss and pushing to put some more muscle mass on. I think it's for me it comes across as being a very somebody who's taking the bull by the horns
Yeah.
and wanting to push forward, which is a good positive thought process.
So that's sort of the second part of this question, which is it worth sacrificing fat loss for this, as in building muscle, or will it be so minor that it would be better to focus on fat loss? And I think, as Andy's saying, it's definitely, I'm not even sure you'd need to sort of sacrifice fat loss. Like, there's this huge notion that you need to be in a big surplus to build a lot of muscle, and that's just not true. And you don't need to do this whole huge bulk thing that we're not bodybuilders. Yeah, you can build a bit of muscle staying relatively lean as long as you're getting enough protein in your diet, recovering well enough, and training at the right intensity. And I think one thing that a lot of people leave out or don't recognize with bodybuilders is that part of the reason they need to bulk so much is that they diet so hard that they probably do get quite a lot of muscle wastage or muscle loss as they diet. Whereas we're not dieting you to that kind of extreme, and you probably won't lose half as much muscle as you think you would. And given the context of this question, focusing on fat loss, if you're keen to build muscle and you're already in a state that's going to be quite hard to make anabolic, as in quite hard to build muscle in, I would say it's the wrong thing to do. Like I say, we should focus on building muscle, but I don't want you to think that that means that you can't be in good shape or that you can't be lean, because you absolutely can do both.
Yeah, it's an inter the one about the bodybuilding thing is very interesting, and you're totally right. I remember listening to Neil Hill, who is Flex Lewis's coach, and he said, so Flex Lewis is the current two or four, not this year, last year actually, the year before, 212, 212 pounds class bodybuilding champion at Olympia, and he sits generally at 240 to 250 pounds. So he has to sit and he sits lean as hell all year round, and he has to sacrifice 30 to 40 pounds of muscle. But you know that's not something that we have to worry about with
And
class.
just a drop of anabolic
Yes,
hormone.
that also helps a
Yeah.
lot.
Yeah. Okay, next question from Sharon. When transitioning from muscle gain slash bulk to fat loss slash cutting, what are the first things you'd look to change? I.e., I know that we need to allow room for improvement at later stages of the cut. So how much of a calorie deficit slash how much cardio, etc., should be introduced at the start of this transition? So first of all, this is almost a bit of, there's a few things that come up with this question. So a lot of people think, oh, okay, you don't want to go too low on calories at the start of your cut because you'll plateau. Or you don't want to put in too much cardio at the start because you'll plateau, and then you'll have no tools left in the toolbox to get past this plateau. But that's not really true. Like, if I put you on very low calories, if you could adhere to them, so adherence is really the problem here. If you could adhere to them, you'd just simply lose the fat faster. You wouldn't like plateau. You don't plateau at a given amount of weeks or anything like that.
Yeah.
It would be because your metabolic rate has come down, or your total daily energy expenditure has come down, and maybe has met the same dieting calories that we're on. But if I put your calories really low, like let's say I'm not going to do this, but let's say I had you on 1200 calories, you wouldn't plateau on that. You might psychologically and then overeat, but it would be an adherence problem. It wouldn't be a physiological problem. Does that make sense?
No, totally. I think all the tools at the toolbox, I think at the start of a cut for me is exactly that, is the adherence side of stuff. Like if you cut calories, chuck in loads of cardio and everything else, it's not the fact that they're plateauing, it's the fact that they can't keep up with it because their head's just not there. So like throwing so much at somebody in one go is actually a psychological thing, not a physical thing. So
yeah, and then there's the question of, do you want to diet quite slowly for a longer period of time, or mm-hmm. do you want to be quite extreme with your cut but for a shorter period of time? And the argument for the slow side is normally, okay, well that way you can maintain a higher level of training and you'll maintain more muscle mass. But you could say the exact same argument for the fast side, because you'd be like, okay, well, I might be in a bigger deficit, but I'm going to be in that deficit for a shorter amount of time. So maybe I won't lose that much muscle, because instead of being in, say, a deficit for 16 weeks, I'm going to be in a deficit for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So I don't know which side I lie on. And it kind of depends on the individual. Like, do you want to like go for it hard, but just for 6 weeks, and realize that it's not a lifestyle thing? Like, you're going to be training hard. You will have to sacrifice, not compromise, your social life to some extent. Or do you want to take a slower approach, where it will take longer, but you'll be able to keep your training intensity up a little bit more. You'll have much more flexibility with your social life, but it will be for a longer period of time. And it kind of depends on the individual, what results they want to get, and how adherent they could be to very low calories.
Yeah, exactly. It depends on the length of their goal, the time that they have, their sort of time as well, the time scales of what they're trying to work to.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are scared of that fast approach because they're like, oh, but that's not sustainable. I'm like, yeah, it's not meant to be sustainable. It's a diet.
Yeah.
It's a short-term diet. And then we come back out of that, bring you back up to maintenance and or whatever your goals are after that. But yeah, it's not like that would be the one, I guess the one thing that you'd have to consider beforehand is to speak to that client and say, look, this is for 6 weeks. It's not meant to be for the rest of your life. Afterwards, we then transition to something that is more sustainable and lifestyle based. But it's a short-term cut.
That's it.
Yeah. All right, next question. It's from Hannah. She says, this is much too large and broad a question for the podcast. So that's a great start. But I'm really interested in understanding the balance of endurance training and weight training. It's definitely a struggle for me because I love both. And there seems to be some obvious trade-offs in trying to find balance between both of them. And then she says, you need to get that woman back on the Fitness Unfiltered podcast who seemingly transitioned from powerlifting to Iron Woman, and ask how she did it. She is amazing, actually. That's Nicola Hobbs, if anyone's wondering. You should all look her up, follow her. What are your thoughts on this?
There's no reason why you can't do both together. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to choose which one has the focus. So there are very few people that can train for multi sports at the same time, because a lot of them don't have any crossover. But there are a lot of sports that you could compete in that do have crossover. So and the sort of the endurance and the weight stuff, a lot of it's just about finding where it sits within your training yourself. You know, it's about working with a coach and finding out, you know, this is the amount of weight sessions I need to get in a week that's not going to affect my endurance training, and this is the amount of endurance training that I need to get in per week without causing niggles or tiredness for your weight training. So it's a delicate balance, I think, is more than anything else.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a good way to put it, actually. Delicate balance. And a good point to make out is that Nicola did do powerlifting and then considerably later, after a lot of training, do Iron Woman. So it's not like she could transition between both the day after each other, or that she was training for both at the same time. So I guess the focus of training was changed. But it's a similar conundrum to what we were talking about before, which is, should I lose fat or build muscle? And you can do both. So you can be good at endurance training and good at strength training, but you won't do either as well as you could do unless you were specifically training for them. So if you specifically looked at fat loss, you're gonna lose more fat than if you were trying to lose fat and build muscle at the same time. If you specifically looked at building muscle, you will build more muscle than if you were also trying to lose fat at the same time. And this is exactly the same for if you want to be really good at endurance training, you need to focus on endurance training and you need to make that your primary goal. And your training and nutrition should all be geared around that. If you want to focus on resistance training, again, you would want to focus on that. That would be your primary goal. And yeah, you could still do a bit of cardio endurance training if you wanted, but you'll never be amazing at one or reach your full potential at one unless you train for one specifically.
Yeah, it's the age-old saying of jack of all trades, master of none, isn't it? It's
Yeah, exactly.
you can cover all the bases you want, but you'll never get good at something until you put the focus on that, or you'll never reach the peak of what you could do unless you focus on that. But at the same point, it's still obviously not as, it's certainly not as big a gap from powerlifting to Ironman or Iron Woman. But, things like this is kind of the one that frustrates me is listening to strength and conditioning coaches giving the whole, oh yeah, footballers are getting too big. They're getting too big and too slow. Well, that's not the fact that they're getting too big and too slow. That's because your training that you're putting them through is shit. I go, you look at guys from the NFL, American football. These guys are like 250 pounds plus, and they can turn on a sixpence. These boys' foot patterns are frightening. You show me what they're doing, and that's the kind of training to get somebody to that size and to that pace. Football still very, very, like certainly football over here still very in the dark ages when it comes to strength and conditioning.
Well,
And
it's interesting,
it's
isn't it? Because there's different demands on those sports. As in, with American football, you need to be big in order to not just be like knocked over because people are going to come at you. But also, isn't the play, like, I don't know much about it, but isn't the play quite short? As in, you only need to be on the pitch for, I don't know, however long.
It's
And
very short, short and sharp.
then you get a rest. So they don't need the same endurance capacity as potentially a football player does for 90 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. But it's you look at the stuff like crossover like the rugby and football, like rugby league especially. These guys are like there's some the thing I hate to hear is like oh the problem is that they always pick. When I was a kid, it was always the smaller kids that got picked because they're the ones that developed faster. So they had a growth spurt, but they're still a midget. But their coordination to someone who's 13 and 6 foot is much better, so they're better on a football. Yet 4 years later, when the kid hits 16, the wee guys, the smaller guys, the taller guys now caught up and overtaken the wee guy because his coordination's back in. So I always found that one quite funny because it's remember hearing stuff like, oh, footballers nowadays spend too much time at the gym. No, that's not the case. Otherwise, you'd be less chance of getting injured if they were spending more time in the gym doing the right things.
Yeah, and I think a good point to make as well when we're talking about, especially in the context of Hannah, who really likes running but also resistance training as well, is that marathon runners spend time in the gym. They've got a strength and conditioning program as well. It's just that they aren't really interested in hypertrophy. They're more interested in strength and avoiding injury.
It's
So there will
again,
always be a place for gym work in endurance athletes as well.
of course there will. It's all to do with, as you say, with an endurance athlete like marathon running, the it's not about, as you say, packing on muscle. It's about making that muscle mobile and bomb-proof so that you don't get injured.
Bomb-proof. I like it.
Bomb-proof.
Okay, well, Andy, it's the last week of Commit to Six. What?
Well.
Which is exciting. I am really excited to hear how everyone's getting on at check-ins this weekend, or how everyone has got on, because that will be the end of Commit to Six. But hopefully everyone is going to join Committed. And just to chat a little bit about that, so it's a continuation program from Commit to Six. You get exactly the same support. So you get check-ins every 2 weeks with me. You get all access to the group. I think a lot of people are a bit confused, but there are people on Committed in the Commit to Six group. You'll probably notice they're the people who answer all your questions, know a hell of a lot, are sharing a lot, sharing their knowledge and their experience, which is amazing, and is exactly why I keep them in the group, because they're like the originals in it, and they can share all their knowledge and their support, and they've probably been through or have been through a lot of the struggles that people who are starting are struggling with as well. So quite an inspirational group. Anyway, anyone who's done Commit to Six can join Committed. And I will give you all the information for that at the last check-in. There are also a few spots. I'm probably not going to take on any one-to-ones, but there's some spots with Andy for one-to-ones. If anyone is interested in that, you can chat to us about that, or chat to Andy about that, or shoot me an email and I will add Andy into the conversation. What else do we need to say about that?
I think
that's it.
Yeah.
Have you got a song for the end of the podcast?
No, I do not. We've discussed this. I'm not doing songs.
I don't know if I have one. Fine.
I don't know.
We'll just...
Let's have a look. What was on my Spotify list?
Okay, what was the last song you listened to?
I was, weirdly enough, listening to a soundtrack from a film called Desperado. It's got Antonio Banderas in it. Very violent. So it's a mariachi song, actually.
All right, go for it. What? This is not what I expected.
It's a great film, though.
It sounds like a little Mexican man on, like, a... What are those cool
guitars? That's pretty much
all
it was. Yeah.
Oh, love it. Okay, well, that signifies that we've reached the end of the podcast. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please share it, give us feedback. Again, I'll be collecting questions as usual in check-ins. I am mega excited for these check-ins this week, especially. And yeah, if you want to talk to us about one-to-one coaching or about staying on and Committed, just shoot either of us a message at any point. And we hope you have a lovely week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.